Hi, I'm Vincent Valk, and welcome to the latest edition of Chemical Week's podcast. My guest today is Kevin Malisi, Executive Vice President for Marketing and Technology at Karita Americas, and we're going to talk a little bit about digitalization in the water treatment space. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, Vincent, how are you? It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Good. How are you?
Excellent. Couldn't be better.
Great, and thanks for joining us today. So I know there's been a lot going on with regard to digitalization and water treatment, and in some ways it's a space that over the past several years has really grown to embrace digitalization, but I think there's also a pretty long way to go. So to kind of set the stage a bit, I wanted to ask you first what you are doing, what Karita Americas is doing in the sort of digitalization area.
Yeah, so, just to start off with a reinforcement of a comment you made there, I think we've made such tremendous advances in digitization. And when I say we, I mean the industry that I'm part of in general. But we are just scratching the surface, in my viewpoint. There's so much runway ahead of us in terms of things to create customer value through digitization. That we're just getting started. So it'll be an interesting decade ahead of us as we go down that path. But what are we doing? It kind of falls into a bunch of different categories. I mean, when you really think about it, first of all, wireless communications has really, enabled a wonderful flow of information that's not intrusive, that doesn't require a heavy cost element to, kind of wire up, if you will, communications from the past. So it makes the deployment of getting data into the cloud, for example, a lot faster and easier than it historically was. And that just really provides a conduit for many, many other things to happen. Mm-hmm. But we look at it as going all the way from the sensory point of view. So the developments are in sensory technology that helps us measure things in aqueous systems that either we weren't able to measure before or measure with a particular degree of accuracy or a desirable degree of accuracy. So digital sensors are on the upswing. There's a lot of information that can be captured in a sensor itself that historically was not the norm with analog sensors. So the digital world starts there. And then again, as I mentioned, we have the way to get that information wirelessly, either to some sort of a repository inside the customer site, inside the customer site, and then the digitization at the site in terms of the devices, the machines that are taking that new information and being able to do something really significant with it. So there's a local control aspect to that digitization, and then of course that information is also shared into the cloud, and in the cloud, the analytics that are being developed, predictive analytics, for example, and the use of artificial intelligence are helping us take that data and convert it into really usable, actionable information that frankly would be very difficult for most folks to be able to sift through, nor would they have the time to do that. And to be able to convert it into information that's actionable and putting it in the hands of people when they need it, in a form they need it, that benefits them.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the way we view that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think your point about, converting the data into actionable information, if you look at sort of digitization in industrial processes, including water treatment, but just in general, I mean, that's really the name of the game, right? Is because any industrial facility just generates so much data that it's impossible for, you know, a person or even a team of people to kind of sift through it in a meaningful way in many circumstances.
Yeah, you know, we have a term that you're probably familiar with that we use called dark data. Mm-hmm. And dark data means, you know, data that's collected by someone or somehow, as simple as, you know, it's a handwritten entry into a logbook, but then it effectively goes on a shelf and it doesn't get used, and yeah. yet it's logged, right? So that's information that if we can uncork that bottle, if you will, to be able to bring light to that dark data, and there's tremendous information to be had if you're able to mine it, and the technology is enabling us to mine it effectively and efficiently.
Yeah, for sure. Wondering, could you maybe give an example of something that had a particular initiative or a particular program or a discovery that you made by using some of the data that you've this sort of dark data maybe that you've filtered through AI or machine learning type algorithms?
Yeah, so one that really we're so excited about and just happens to be very current is a technology that we refer to as S-sensing, in this case, CS. S-sensing is a kind of an umbrella brand that relates to a lot of higher technology automation platforms and data management platforms. But this one in particular is associated with wastewater applications in industry. Mm-hmm. So it starts with, we mentioned before, the sensory part of this, some really incredible sensory technology for measuring effectively turbidity in water, but doing it in such a way that involves laser technology to get a very precise measurement of what's changing with turbidity over time. So we're able to measure that, and we're taking that information into a highly proprietary control device at the site. And that device is able to, through its own algorithms, really process this data. And it results in the controlling of the application of chemistry to achieve the desired goals that we're looking for in terms of liquid-solid separation. But at the same time, that information is in the cloud, and the analytics that are in the cloud help to further provide insight and in-depth kind of views of what the cause and effect relationships are. You know, I almost think of it as a large multiple regression kind of analysis where you're sorting out there's a dependent variable and there's a lot of independent variables. And which independent variables are really the players here? So that kind of work is being done, and it really helps with the fine-tuning of the process control so that we're not feeding too much chemistry or too little chemistry, and getting away from those days of you apply chemistry to a system like that kind of to guard against the worst-case situation. Well, mm-hmm. There's a lot of money that's wasted when you do that, even though you may have good intentions. We want to eliminate that. The right amount of chemistry at the right point in time. And that kind of technology would be a very specific example of that.
So it seems to me that the net result of that would probably be that overall you're going to be feeding less chemistry into the system, so to speak.
Yeah. But instead of just saying less, I maybe it's the right amount at a point in time. Right. So there are situations where people are underfeeding chemistry. But yeah, I think overall it's fair to say that to get the desired outcome in terms of the performance of the system and the effluent of a wastewater process, most of the time, it's going to be a very significant net reduction in the amount of chemistry applied. Yes, that's correct.
Sure. So it's it's more variable on sort of a day-to-day basis, but net-net, it might be less.
Day-to-day, you could even start to break it down even finer than that, shift to shift, or maybe even hour-to-hour.
Right. Sure. Yeah, I know conditions can be very changeable, you know, within these facilities.
No doubt about that.
So, you know, taking a step back here, what is driving the need for more digital solutions in water treatment?
You know, there's a couple things that really stand out in my mind. The first one, that I think of kind of as a mega trend issue tied to that question is the skill gap that our customers are facing in their markets. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you look at the demographics of an aging population and the number of people that are getting towards their retirement and are likely to retire in the next 10 years, that there's a lot of difficulty finding people to fill roles that are being vacated through retirements. Mm-hmm. And the luxury of having a lot of time, you know, years for to develop the expertise that Kevin, the operator in a given plant, may have developed, and he was great at managing that cooling system and, you know, just learned through all kinds of experience and he's top notch. Well, you don't have the luxury of waiting that time anymore. So how do you make people as the most inexperienced operator as capable as the more experienced operator in a traditional sense? How do you make that happen fast and help effectively close that skill gap through technology, if that makes sense? So that's one way. That's one driver. The other one is just the issues associated with water and water scarcity, for example. So it's no surprise that the demands for fresh water are going to be outpacing the supply. And if you look at the projections for what the world will look like in 2050, for example, it's a pretty scary scenario. So water reuse and using what previously would be thought of as impaired waters that were, no one would have thought to use it as the makeup water, the freshwater supply to a system, are now going to be not such crazy ideas. And that just is taking off. But when you use a water like that, often the amount of control and the precision of the control of the operating and the chemical parameters of that system may have to be a lot tighter than they historically were. So there's more eyes, if you will, are required, and more frequently and almost continuously, to see and measure the changes in that environment to make sure that everything stays in control. Because if it gets out of control, the ramifications can potentially be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So deteriorating water quality, deteriorating or less available fresh water is another thing that is a major mega trend driving that.
Sure. So I guess to the extent that you're using sort of recycled process water, or, I mean, I guess the term of art for that would be gray water. You need to make sure that the measurements on it are very precise, and that you need to kind of continually make sure that it's fit for purpose. So you need to have, yeah, I guess, very precise measurements to ensure that.
That's right. Absolutely. Okay. And that comes through digitization as the enabler to make that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. And not that it's not important with fresh water too, but as you said, just the downside there is so great that you need to really be precise about it.
Right. And those impaired waters, if you will, Gray water, of course, that example being the trends in using municipal secondary or tertiary treated sewage effluent as a fit for purpose water in industrial settings is also increasing with time, particularly in, for example, California. Mm-hmm. But sometimes those impaired waters and the sources of them are right from within the plant itself. So some waste stream that's, aqueous based that would have normally gone to the wastewater plant doesn't wind up going to the wastewater plant. It can be kind of from a point source point of view inside the plant, it can get reused right then and there. So the variety of impaired waters, the characterization of impaired waters, the fingerprint of impaired waters is highly variable, mm-hmm. and it can be really difficult to deal with in the absence of digitized technologies.
So the two really kind of go hand in hand.
They do. In my viewpoint, it would be virtually impossible to do one without the other.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned when we started the conversation, sort of at the beginning of this journey, although a lot has been done, there's a lot yet to do. So I want to know, how far along are some of these tools, particularly with regard to the kind of big data type machine, AI type tools for water treatment? And what do you see as the potential for the future of these technologies?
Well, again, in terms of how far along, it's difficult to really quantify that because,
sure,
the sky is the limit. So exactly how high that sky is, I'm not so sure right now. But I can't imagine that we are not at the what in reality is the embryonic stages of that. And I'm sure that some of the players in that space would maybe take exception to that. But in terms of what eventually is going to happen and be possible, I can't imagine we're not taking very baby steps now, realistically. Sure. And you could just see that reflected in the degree of investment that the significant players in this industry and other industries are making in this. I mean, they're not doing that because everybody else is. They're doing that because they also see the same. And I think you're going to see nothing but tremendous advances. Mm-hmm. And advances not only in technically the things that are, for example, measured or the analytics that are applied, but the cost associated with that, like any other, like any other technology or an S-curve kind of thinking, the cost is going to come down dramatically over time.
Yeah.
Dramatically.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Thinking about this question a little, and maybe this is a bit of a blue sky thing, but I'm curious, with regard to the potential of it. I mean, are there any cool applications or technologies that maybe seem a little bit embryonic or theoretical now that if you look out 5-10 years into the future, it could be something that really is put into practice in a meaningful way?
So the first thing at the top of my list there, Vincent, would be, again, the use of artificial intelligence.
Okay.
That term, just like the term predictive analytics, those terms are often used very loosely in today's world. Some of the interpretations of what artificial intelligence is just are amazing to me, that's kind of stretched. That's something that is really fundamentally nowhere near artificial intelligence is characterized as such. So I think that the AI is going to be the place that really is not only in its early stages, but is really going to has the highest potential to produce some major shifts in how things are done in the water space, major changes. You know, there are businesses that Creed is very much invested in. And I'll cite one, an organization called Fracta, F-R-A-C-T-A, that we are a investor in, that's comes out of the West Coast. So their initial focus is in municipal drinking water systems. So if you can imagine a township that has a lot of underground pipe that's moving potable water around, and they certainly don't want to have leaks in those systems that go undetected until a point of failure. Well, the technology that we're talking about there is basically through true artificial intelligence able to predict that this particular stretch of pipe is most likely to fail within a certain period of time. Okay. So if you're going to invest in replacing that pipe, either because maybe it contains lead or some other material, or it's just so old, it actually will enable you to determine where your investment should be, in what order and sequence, to mitigate the potential for a catastrophic failure, and at the same time have a huge economic benefit. But they're just getting going, and it's just amazing stuff to watch how that works. And when you look at the human interface, the visualization of this incredible array of data that gets distilled down to a visual picture that says, here's what I should do and when and why. And it's beyond cool, beyond cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess it's showing you here is the pipe or the piece of equipment or whatever it is that might be likely to fail within that given time frame, and you can kind of almost like see it on the screen, kind of.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah, for sure. That does sound cool. Finally, wanted to ask a little bit about what's been going on for the past year or so in terms of COVID, and obviously there's a link between that and digitalization, and we've all been using Zoom and video calls and whatnot. But then also on top of that, I mean, sometimes you could get remote monitoring at industrial facilities, and there's obviously a link to the pandemic there. So, I mean, I'm wondering maybe if you, from your point of view, if you've learned anything about the usage of digital tools, and here I really am talking more about the sorts of things that we've been discussing in terms of plant operations and water treatment and that sort of thing within your business. If you've learned anything from the pandemic using those tools, and where you see that maybe going in the future, those learnings.
You know, it's hard to even say the words that there's something good that came out of the pandemic, because obviously from a human consequences, that's not the case. But there were learnings is a great word. So I think that what the pandemic did for us and for many businesses, it really pointed out that some of the historical norms are either not needed or can be done very differently and actually create more value than you may have ever imagined, because it was forced to happen.
Yeah.
So an example would be remote let's say, for example, surveying a prospective customer's application. The customer is interested in what our technologies and our applications can bring to the party in terms of helping them with the pain points that whatever they might be suffering. So traditionally, there would be for example, local personnel augmented by visits from headquarters folks to be able to assess that situation and make, you know, a preliminary recommendation, you know, followed by a refined one over time. Well, now we're experimenting with different technologies of visualization where the camera does that from afar. So the experts are closer to the customer, in effect, even though they're physically far away. Okay. And they're being very comfortable doing that in this digitized and visualized remote visualization ways to do things faster and more effectively than they would have the old-fashioned way. So that learning is going to be has already started to find its way into our operating practices. And again, that's one that I'm sure is just scratching the surface, like so many of the others.
Yeah, and I could see where that would be a good example because it's more efficient in the sense of you can actually see the process at any time. You can spend a little bit more time with it. You can spend a little bit more time, you know, digitally, but still with the customer. So it gives you more of a sense of what's going on in that respect.
Yeah, and from a collaborative point of view. So if you have three, subject matter experts that are all looking at the same problem, perhaps one from a chemical point of view, one from a biological point of view, the other one from a mechanical point of view, and for those three subject matter experts to basically be looking at the same picture.
Yeah.
At the same time and collaborating amongst themselves through their own internal remote tools, right? Like the one that we're using right now, to be able to do that, man, it's a night and day in terms of the way it used to be. Well, you know, three people are going to fly out here and so on and so forth, which is still obviously useful and appropriate in many cases, but you can size a problem much faster through some of these new technologies and get to the actual solution and the outcome from that solution faster.
I think
the technologies, Vincent, is just going to kind of augment some of the traditional best practices and at the same time replace those with more effective and efficient tools.
Yeah, and I mean, as you said, there could still be value to going there in person sometimes, but you can almost like iterate the process to pinpoint what's going on remotely as well. You
know,
so
yeah, you know, customer, we think of customer touch points, right? It's no longer just that physical touch point or being in the same building or the same room or the same meeting with someone. Those tools are enabling us to have higher customer touch with more people and more contributors to the solution than ever before without necessarily having them physically present.
For sure. Or in other words, and I guess to close it out, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, that's about it. So, you know, thanks very much for your time, Kevin. Enjoyed talking to you.
It was a pleasure, Vincent. It's always an enjoyable time for me as well. Thank you for the opportunity to share these thoughts with your audience. It's much appreciated.
Great. Thanks again. And this is Vincent Volk signing off for Chemical Week.